In this period, November 12, 1931, a dispatch to the newspapers, from Bogota, Colombia, told of a puzzling crime wave. In the hospitals were 45 persons, suffering with stab wounds. The police were unable to explain what appeared to be a general attack, but they arrested more than 200 persons. Another occurrence of phantom bullets, in the state of New Jersey, was told of, in the New York Herald, February 2, 1916. Mr. and Mrs. Charles F. Rep., of Glassboro, NJ, had been fired upon by phantom bullets. This was a special attack upon one house. There were sounds of breaking glass, and bullet holes were found in window panes, but nothing beyond the window panes was marked. It is such a circumstance as was told of in accounts of the Camden sniper. It is as if somebody fired, not only with a missile-less gun, or with invisible bullets, but as if with intent only to perforate windows, and with the effects controlled by, and limited by, his intent. Consequently, instead of thinking of a shooting at window panes, I tend simply to think that holes appeared in window glass. Nobody in the house was injured, but Mr. and Mrs. Rep. were terrified and they fled. Members of the township committee investigated, and they reported that, though no bullets were findable, the windows were broken much as a window usually is, when a bullet crashes through it. That's the story. Of witnesses, I see Soddy and Howard R. Moore were mentioned. I sent letters of inquiry to all persons whose names were given, and received not one reply. There are several ways of explaining. One is that it is probable that persons who have experiences such as those told of in this book, receive so many crank letters that they answer none. Dear me, once upon a time, I enjoyed a sense of amusement and superiority toward cranks. And now here am I, a crank, myself. Like most writers, I have the moralist somewhere in my composition, and here I warn, take care, oh, reader, with whom you are amused, unless you enjoy laughing at yourself. It seemed to me doubtful that a woman could go along Upper Broadway, and jab, with a hatpin, five men and a woman, before being caught. There has been a gathering of suggestions of not ordinary woundings. In Lloyd's Weekly News, London, February 21, 1909, there was an account of a panic in Berlin. Many women, in the streets of the city, had been stabbed. It was said that the assailant had been seen, and he was described as a young man, always vanishing. If he was seen, he is another of the uncatchables. In this newspaper of February 23, it was said that 73 women had been stabbed, all except four of them not seriously. We have had data that suggest the existence of vampires, other than humans of the type of the Portuguese sailor, but the brazen and serialized, sometimes murderous, but sometimes petty assaults upon men and women are of a different order, and seem to me to be the work of imaginative criminals, stabbing people to make mystery, and to make a stir. I feel that I can understand their motives, because once upon a time I was an imaginative criminal, myself. Once upon a time I was a boy. One time, when I was a boy, I caught a lot of flies. There was nothing of the criminal, nor of the malicious, in what I did, this time, but it seems to give me an understanding of the phantom stabbers and snipers. I painted the backs of the flies red, and turned them loose. There was an imaginative pleasure in thinking of flies, so bearing my mark, attracting attention, causing people to wonder, spreading far, appearing in distant places, so marked by me. In some of our stories there is much suggestion that there was no vanishing man, that wounds appeared upon people, as appeared or as it was said to have appeared a wound on the head of a sailor. See back to the story told by the captain of the Brexie. Or that wounds appeared upon people, and that the victims, examined by the police, were more or less bullied into giving some kind of description of an assailant. However, some of the stories of the vanishing man look as if he, too, may be. There may be several ways of doing these things. Early in the year 1907, a vanishing man was reported from the town of Winchester, England. I take from the Weekly Dispatch, London, February 10, 1907. Women of Winchester were complaining of an uncatchable, who was committing petty assaults upon them, such as wrapping their hands. A mysterious feature of the affair is that the man disappears, as if by magic. The Phantom Stabber of Bridgeport, Conn, appeared 1 February 20, 1925, and the last of his attacks, of which I have record, was upon June 1, 1928. That was a long time in which to operate uncaught. In the daytime, mostly, though sometimes at night, girls were stabbed, in the streets, in such public places as a department store, and the entrance of a library. Descriptions of the assailant were indefinite. In almost all instances the wounds were not serious. One of the stories, as told in the New York Herald Tribune, August 27, 1927, is typical of the circumstances of publicity, or of the confidence of an assailant that he could not be caught. If my stories will be regarded as ghost stories, a novelty about them is the eeriness of crowded thoroughfares alert near Coventry Street, London, and the sneak of an invisible in Broadway, New York. I expect sometime to hear of a haunted subway, during rush hours. Edgar Allan Poe would say of me that I'm no artist, and don't know how to infuse atmosphere. One would think that I had never heard of the uncanniness of dark nights in lonely places. Some of the stories are of desperate plays for notoriety. I have a story now, not of doings in a graveyard, but in a department store. Bridgeport, Conn. Staged on a staircase, with an audience of hundreds of persons, there was a very theatrical performance. A review of this melodrama was published in the Herald Tribune. The stabber who has terrorized Bridgeport for the last 30 months suddenly appeared this afternoon and claimed his 23rd victim in a crowded downtown department store. The victim was Isabel Pelsker, 14, 539, Main Street, messenger girl employed in the D.M. Reed store. The girl was stabbed in the store where she is employed. The stabbing occurred at 4:50, just 2 minutes before closing time of the store. Already some of the store doors had been locked, and the large crowd of shoppers were being ushered from the store. The employees were leaving their counters, and the victim had started up the stairs from the arcade side of the first floor to the women's dressing room. The girl had scarcely ascended more than half a dozen steps when she was attacked by the assailant, who lunged his sharp blade into her side, causing a severe wound. He got away. Nobody reported having seen him escaping. The girl could give only a meager description of him. 10. Relatively to the principles of modern science, werewolves cannot be. But I know of no such principle that is other than tautology or approximation. It is myth stuff. Then, if relatively to a group of phantoms, werewolves cannot be, there are at least negative grounds for thinking that they are quite likely. Relatively to the principles, or lack of principles, of ultra-modern science, there isn't anything that can't be, even though also it is not clear how anything can be. So my acceptance, or pseudo-conclusion, is that werewolves are quite likely unlikely. Once upon a time, when minds were dosed with the pill theory of matter, werewolves were said to be physically impossible. Very little globes were said to be the ultimates of matter, and were supposed to be understandable, and people thought they knew what matter is. But the pills have rolled away. Now we are told that the ultimates are waves. It is impossible to think of a wave. One has to think of something that is waving. If anybody can think of crime, virtue, or color, independent of somebody who is criminal, virtuous, or colored, that thinker or whatever may say that he knows what he is talking about, in denying the existence of anything, upon physical grounds. To say that the ultimate waves are electrical comes no closer to saying something. If there is no definition of electricity better than that of saying that it is a mode of motion, we're not enlighteningly told that the ultimate waves are moving motions. My suspicion is that we've got everything reversed, or that all things that have the sanction of scientists, or that are in agreement with their myths, are ghosts, and that things called ghosts are, because they are not in agreement with the spooks of science, the more nearly real things. I now suspect that the spiritualists are reversely right, that there is a ghost world, but that it is our existence, that when spirits die they become human beings. I now have a theory that once upon a time, we were real and alive, but departed into the state that we call existence, that we have carried over with us from the real existence, from which we died, the ideas of truth, and of axioms and principles and generalizations, ideas that really meant something when we were really alive, but that, of course, now, in our phantom existence, which is demonstrable by any X-ray photograph of any of us, can have only phantom meaning, so then are never ending, but always frustrated, search for our lost reality. We come upon chimera and mystification, but persistently have beliefs, as retentions from an experience in which there were things to believe in. I'd not say that all of us are directly ghosts, most of us may be the descendants of the departed from a real existence, who, in our spook world, pseudo-propagated. Once upon a time, but in our own times, there were two alleged marvels that were sources of uncommon contempt, or amusement, to scientists. They were the transformation of elements into other elements, and the transformation of human animals into other animals.